With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
It's Tuesday, the 26th of May. I'm Jules Breach, he's Andy Brassel, and this is Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily. So much to discuss today. We'll chat about the latest news in restarting football, but also on the flip side, the ending of the WSL and the psychological impact this break is having on players up and down the pyramid.
Yeah, with that in mind, Jules, let's go straight into a conversation I had yesterday with Dr. Tim Rogers, sports psychiatrist with Cognacity, who works with a number of Premier League and EFL players and clubs. And I began by asking him if players at below elite level might be suffering particular anxiety in the current situation.
For sure, that's true. I mean, definitely. And it's not just players too. Obviously, there's a whole system of coaches and managers and support staff that work with those players. And definitely for those people, you know, many of them, you know, their anxieties and stresses have risen for a number of different reasons.
So if we think of like the intensity of the way Premier League players live their careers, I mean, you've written an article about it. What are the sort of common problems that you speak to players about that might have been exacerbated by lockdown? Common stresses in top level football?
Yeah, I think, you know, there are certain kind of there are certain common stresses that are, I suppose, specific to people who perform highly. Firstly, and most obviously, you know, every athlete has had to assess their immediate sporting goals, and often athletes or people who perform highly, you know, their self-worth and their self-esteem, perhaps more so than other people, can be really tightly bound to their identity as a footballer. and the absence of competitive play or uncertainty about when that might return, you know, results in doubt and negativity rising a lot. And there are all sorts of other things as well, such as schedules and routines. So, for example, athletes might well wake early in the day to train, and their days are probably pretty highly organised. And so when you suddenly go into lockdown, athletes have frequently found that their sleep-wake cycles or other routines have been a real problem. And I think, I suppose, the other thing to say is that, obviously, like all of us, some athletes have better or worse mental health, and there are certain condition-specific problems that have been a real struggle for athletes during the lockdown. And to give you a couple of examples, some people with disordered eating, for example, often in aesthetic sports, but also in football, you know, it's harder to control those kind of eating behaviours if you're at home very close to your fridge. And also, I guess another example is obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD. And so where there are public health messages about the importance of hand washing and worries about contamination, if you already have OCD, which many footballers do, you know, it's really difficult to manage and cope with those kind of health messages.
So has there been an increase in demand for like the use of your services during the pandemic from players?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I work, one of the services I work for is called Big White Wall, and that's an online anonymous mental health service. And the traffic and the sign-ups for membership on Big White Wall has been up around about 100% since the pandemic. Wow. So a huge increase in need and traffic. But I think that's online support. But I would say that in terms of face-to-face support, because of anxiety about obviously catching COVID-19, many people have stayed away from general practitioners or from accident emergency departments. And I would say that there's been probably a slight reduction in face-to-face appointment seeking. And probably what that means is that, you know, there's a higher level of unmet need out there. So athletes who are going through a really difficult moment but may not have the support that they would probably benefit from receiving.
If we're looking at the Premier League itself, we've had a few players so far, like Troy Deeney, talking about their anxiety about the prospect of coming back to even do light sort of individual training. Do you think this could be the start, as we move forward, of a more frank conversation about mental health and about how elite footballers actually feel?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting that you said that. As a society, everybody knows that we have a stigma about mental well-being problems and mental ill health. And I think it's true that that's slowly changing. And it certainly helps in professional sport that many many high-profile players have come forward at times and given testimonials about what they've been through. I would say it's interesting that many of the players and athletes that do that are often players who have either retired already or maybe about to retire. And I would say that the professional sports, and in particular football, is still not really a safe place to confide about mental ill health. In non-sporting employment, there are clear laws about not discriminating against people who have health conditions or disabilities. But in football, that can't be imposed in the same way. I know the reality is that the elite footballers that I work with guard their confidentiality fiercely for the simple reason that they feel that their transfer value or their transfer prospects are quite likely to be seriously impacted if they were to openly come out and talk about what they've been through. And I think, aside from the sort of practicalities of it, definitely there remains a sort of sense among elite athletes that they should be tough and they should have grit and they should push through whatever they're going through. And I suppose that's what they're taught in many situations. They're kind of trained to try and be like that. But that's a problem if you have something that you need to seek help for, but you feel like doing so would make you weak. And often one of the first conversations I have to have is of a kind that, you know, well, mental health problems are not weaknesses, they're health problems, and that's different.
Finally, it does look as if the Premier League will be on the way back at some point. how will players and clubs have to manage the concerns of players going forward? Because it will be a very different environment that they'll be coming back into, especially behind closed doors and with very heightened safety and hygiene procedures. So how will they manage that? And have clubs or players been in touch with you about that already?
Yeah, for sure. So when I speak to sport and exercise medicine doctors in Premier League clubs, I know that there are sort of national meetings and national networks of communication and I suppose shared decision making and advice about how best to do this. And it's obviously something completely novel. We've never had to do anything like this ever before, so there's an extent to which we're finding our feet as we go along. However, I know that a lot of thought and care is going into it, and many football clubs, not least because their players are extremely expensive assets, but also because their athletes are people too, you know, are investing a lot of time and effort in looking after their players. I suppose it's really important that, as well as that, that each club has to be a kind of psychologically safe place. So it has to be okay to talk about what you're going through, all your worries or fears, without concern about other people shutting that conversation down or I suppose responding to that in a negative way. And you know, actually, those kind of club environments have a really big impact on performance as well. So even before the pandemic, you know, it's something that clubs are aware of in terms of looking after the emotional health of their players for a whole variety of reasons.
Dr. Tim Rogers there, sports psychiatrist with Cognacity. He's also involved with Big White Wall, which is an online service providing access to millions with anxiety, depression, and other common mental health issues. You don't have to be a sports person to get involved. And as Tim was saying, they've had a huge upturn in traffic during the pandemic. That's bigwhitewall.com.
Yeah, and I think it's a really important discussion to have, particularly as it's been Mental Health Awareness Week as well. So a lot of sports people, a lot of people in the public eye have been talking about mental health this week. And particularly while we're going through such an uncertain time, I think that it's really important to be quite open about discussing this. And some of the things that Dr. Tim discussed with you were really interesting. And it reminded me of an article that I read earlier on in this week on The Athletic from Adam Crafton, who discussed a lot of these mental side effects that could be affecting particularly EFL players, which is something I know that we're going to discuss in greater detail. But one of the parts of the article I found really interesting is that Adam Crafton points out that the PFA did a survey, and of the 111 current players who responded to the survey, 24 of them said that they were depressed or considering self-harm. And from 262 current and ex-players, nearly 70% were worried about their livelihood, and 72% were feeling nervous and anxious about their future. And at the moment, I think that is really important to discuss, Andy, because with particularly a lot of the lower league EFL clubs, there are going to be so many players who are coming to the end of contracts next month in June and who will be left without a job, and the kind of side effects that can have, the mental effects that they're going to be going through at the moment, not knowing what their future holds, must be really tough.
Yeah, I think so. And is something that Dr. Tim brought up on there, the fact that you know, some of these players don't have long-term financial security. You know, you're looking at guys who are on one or 2 year contracts at League One or two level. And another point in this Athletic article is the fact that, you know, there's going to be a huge market out there for players. Now, funnily enough, for clubs, that's going to be one of the few bits of good financial news that really comes out of this pandemic, because there's going to be a huge pool of players for them to choose from. And I think players that maybe would have been out of your price range before, you will find will be in your price range now, because clubs will have less money to pay players, and players will simply need to work. So I think for them, as with a lot of the rest of the world, they'll be taking lower wages, and that will be tough. I mean, the bit that I thought was brilliant, actually, in the Athletic article is the bit that Adam relayed from Graham Souness on Sky Sports. Now, I know Souness is someone that a lot of people have a particular view of, a sort of old school guy, a man's man. But he says here, and Adam relays the words from his recent chat on Sky Sports, Souness said, there are going to be tragic cases. There will be players who are professional footballers today who will not be in 6 months. There is a correction coming all across the country for all the different money the Chancellor has handed out. He now somehow has to come up with taxes and an acceptable way to get that back. And football will fall into that category. Clubs will find themselves in dire financial straits and may end up going out of business. The consequence of that will be players on the dole. The talk is the mother of all recessions. This is the time when the big guys in football have to think of everybody involved. There has to be a sharing of the incredible riches of the Premier League. There will be so many casualties and we have to take care of the little guys. Now, I felt that was great that Souness came out and talked like that, and hopefully people will respond to that. But it was interesting seeing the player who was brought in at the beginning of the article, Connor Simpson, who's contracted to Preston but's been out on loan at various clubs, including Carlisle. And he was saying in his WhatsApp group with his friends, and you know, bear in mind he's 20, a lot of them are talking about, you know, possibilities, career possibilities outside football, and there will be players who drift from the game. Now, that's sad, of course, but, you know, I think we have to have a real concern for players who are in deeper as well, players who have families and financial responsibilities that they're really going to struggle to meet.
Absolutely. And Connor Simpson is just one of 1,400 players in the EFL whose contracts expire next month. That is a huge number of individuals who will be currently feeling uncertain about their future and not knowing what comes next. And when you talk about the players who have families to support, who have young children, who maybe have elder relatives that also live with them, the impact that this could have on their lives is huge. I think there's this common thought, Andy, of kind of footballer status, isn't there? That a lot of people think that all footballers all fall under the same bracket. They're all loaded. They don't have any financial concerns. But that's really not the case. Not all footballers earn 20 grand a week, do they? And when we look lower down in the EFL, some of these footballers might earn a fairly average salary, just like a lot of other people do up and down the country. And that means that they certainly don't earn enough money to go 6 months without work and it not be damaging to their home life and to them being able to support their families. You know, there are going to be a lot of these players at the moment who will be worried about affording their household bills, considering taking mortgage holidays and dreading that unemployed feeling that a lot of them are going to kind of potentially fall into in the next couple of months. And I think the subject of mortgages is so interesting. They talked about this in the Athletic article, that a lot of people, so you and I, for example, Andy, probably have 25-year-long mortgages, mortgage terms, and we'll pay them off slowly across the years. Whereas footballers, I didn't realize this, but it all makes complete sense once I read, it made complete sense once I read the article, that a lot of footballers tend to take out shorter terms on their mortgages because they get paid such a large sum of money in a short space of time because they have shorter careers. So the hope for them is that they manage to pay off these mortgages by the time they retire in their 30s. And then they don't have a huge mortgage and any huge debt kind of hanging over them once they retire.
Yes.
I'd never really thought about that. But actually, you can see just how quickly that would become problematic if they're out of work for a sustained period of time, can't you?
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And I think as well, the other thing that we have to talk about, apart from the financial aspect, and another thing we heard there from Dr. Tim, it's not just about, I think, players in League One and League Two being a bit close to, in inverted commas, normal people and their sort of way that they go through life and their sort of means and income. But I think it is about, as you said before, Jules, the status. I mean, I think for a lot of people, work his sense of self. But I think particularly, as Tim was saying, the footballers who from a very early age have to decide between, you know, academic priorities, you know, social priorities, and just completely concentrating on sport, because very few players start out thinking, right, I'm going to play for Coventry City or Macclesfield Town or whatever. You're there aiming to get to the very top. And, you know, maybe it doesn't work out like that. And the players who are successful in League One and League Two are the ones who evacuate that slight disappointment, maybe, and manage to make a good career in the lower divisions. But still, you've been a footballer probably since you were 8, 9 years old, maybe even younger. And that all of a sudden you're not able to have that. And not only are you not able to have that, but that sense of self might be absent for another 6 months or another 12 months if you don't get picked up by a club, and maybe never if you end up being one of those players who doesn't get picked up at all. I mean, that is something that's very difficult to cope with. Of course, like, financial concerns are important, and, you know, that affects mental health and that affects the well-being of your family. But I think as important is the fact that for footballers who've committed their whole lives to doing what they're doing, it's something that must be incredibly difficult to get your head around.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that a lot of these footballers are now kind of looking at exactly how the EFL is going to complete this season if they are to do so. And going back to your comments about what Graham Souness has said about this, Richard Masters, the head of the Premier League, has said, in terms of our commitments to other people, in terms of this season, we've made good of those commitments to our solidarity partners, including the EFL. And in terms of 2021, we've forwarded 50% of that money to them. Of course, we want to continue to support the football pyramid. And I think this is a growing concern, isn't it? And another kind of big talking point is how the football pyramid are going to be supported financially if this break in football does continue. And we've had an email about this from Freddie Webb. Thanks for your email, Freddie, who says, "Hey, Jules and Andy, given that many football league clubs are living off the furlough scheme and seem to be weeks away from going bust rather than months, do you see the Premier League, the government, or another source providing them with financial support, as gate receipts will likely be cut off until 2021. He says, "As a Portsmouth fan growing up, I know all too well what it's like for my football club to be close to shutting down forever. And I would hate to see hundreds of thousands of football fans across the country potentially losing their football club. It's something that the Huddersfield Town owner, Phil Hodgkinson, was also warned about this week in the press. It's been reported that he thinks the Football League could lose up to 60 sides through bankruptcy if clubs are required to play in empty stadiums next season. Andy, what are your thoughts on that and what Freddie's pointed out?
Well, they're going to need help from somewhere if football is going to continue and the English pyramid is going to continue in its current shape. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And it would be nice to see something proactive. I mean, what we saw with Harry Kane sponsoring Leyton Orient through supporting a couple of different channels, I think was fantastic. But we don't want clubs relying on individuals, really. It would be nice if it was something collective and it was something based in the football community, even though what Harry Kane's done is absolutely wonderful. But I think what they need for the moment is certainty. And that's where the problem has been. Now, obviously, the Championship has resolved to carry on, and there are very few dissenting voices. I think it's just Hull City at the moment who are not on side with that.
And they went back into training yesterday, didn't they, Andy? The Championship clubs, I believe. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. And League Two is obviously at the other end of the scale, although with the decision agreed in principle for it to come to an end, we still don't know what's happening in terms of relegation, because it seems as if the league might overrule the wishes of the clubs and relegate Stevenage, or for example, at the end of the season when they do finally draw a line under it. The difficult one, really difficult one, is League One. And League One is so difficult because there are some absolutely huge clubs in it. And that's what the problem is, because I think League One and League Two clubs aren't in such a different situation in that going on without gate receipts, it will cost them more to put on the games than they'll get in. And so they'll just be shipping even more money out. If they were to continue over the summer, you're looking at extending contracts of players who the last thing they need is to carry on paying out of contract players. So that would be tough as well. But if you look at some of the teams in League One, I mean, we mentioned a name like Coventry, who, you know, it's been less than 20 years since they're out of the Premier League. Portsmouth, who Fred mentioned before when he wrote in. Sunderland, of course, we've seen a lot about the effect of relegation on them. If you've been watching the Netflix series, Sunderland Till I Die. So you can understand the anxiety of these clubs to want to continue as well. And it's something we've seen at all levels, you know, people fighting their own corners. And you can completely understand that, even if it's been done in quite a clumsy way. The news that we've got at the moment is that it seems that the majority of League One teams might go for points per game. Now, I don't think that would be the end of it by any stretch of the imagination. Now, in terms of if the season's curtailed, apparently 51% of clubs, including, I think it's 13 from the Championship, have to approve the idea before the EFL then go back to the League One clubs and ask them to vote again on what's actually gonna happen. And they reckon it's pretty balanced at the moment. But there are a few clubs who have said they will, in inverted commas, go with the flow, according to reports. So they would basically back the majority, and that would be enough to give a narrow majority to relegate the three teams who are at the bottom at the moment. So that would be Tranmere, Southend and Bolton. If they went for either points per game or weighted points per game, although it seems it will be standard points per game the way it's done, and that Coventry and Rotherham would go up at the top. And I guess to quell the disquiet of those bigger clubs, they would still go on with the 14 playoffs. So I think at the moment it's Oxford, Portsmouth, Wickham and Fleetwood who are in there, which, again, I don't think we'd be hearing the end of it, because it would mean Sunderland, for example, would just miss out. So, you know, we've known all along there are no easy solutions. But as far as the EFL goes, League One is by far the most complicated issue, and we'll see what happens.
I think with all of these things, as you say, Andy, there is no resolution that kind of makes everybody happy. There's going to be something that upsets one team or a couple of teams. And I think that that's the difficult thing at the moment, is that whatever solution they come up with, it's going to upset some people. And unfortunately, that's just the situation that we're living in at the moment. Understandably, because that is the next stage, i.e. how we finish this season, that seems to be where all the emphasis is at the moment. But of course, for owners and fans of clubs in more so the lower leagues of the EFL, the fear for them isn't necessarily how we finish this season, it's actually what happens to their clubs after that.
Soulless suit and tie self-serving fools who can't remember the last time they ever paid to get in to see a game have stuck a dagger through the heart of football's fairness and integrity. In the midst of difficult decisions at a difficult time, we only wanted those running the game to protect the soul of football, and the absolute clowns couldn't even do that. I think it's a disgrace. My heart goes out to Mark Palios and Nicola Palios and the Tranmere fans as well. It's not right.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Are you struggling to find something to watch during lockdown? You've drained Netflix, rewatched all your old favourites, and now you need something new? Well, we're here to help. Join us for Clash of the Titles, the podcast where two movies with something in common go head-to-head in a fight to the death.
Release the Kraken.
Well, not death. We just decide which one is better.
When they do a long shot of the crowd in the ivory tower, it's different to the close-up. And if you look closely, you can see E.T., Mickey Mouse, Chewbacca, Ewoks, and C-3PO.
So when Wolfgang Petersen went to Spielberg, went, yeah, could you maybe re-edit my movie? Steven Spielberg went, yeah. Do you know what I'm probably going to cut out? E.T., mate.
I made that.
Find your new favourite movie or revisit an old classic with me, Alex Zane, Vicky Crompton and Chris Tilley. New episodes out every Monday and Thursday.
Clash of the Titles is a Stakhanov production.
Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily. And of course, you can always get in touch with us at Jules Breach, at Andy Brassel, Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com. Now, we were talking about the plans to finish the EFL season by whichever means in the first part. And now we're going to talk about a season that definitely has finished, the FA Women's Super League and Championship of both finished with immediate effect. We don't know on how the final tables will be calculated at the moment, whether they'll be voided, whether they'll have positions determined using points per game. I mean, it could be quite interesting at the top because Manchester City are a point ahead of Chelsea, but they played a game more. And if it was points per game, either weighted or unweighted, then Chelsea would be top, which would obviously have implications in terms of Champions League qualification, as well as a potential title being awarded or not awarded. Jules, it seems like everyone's on board to finish the season, as is. And Casey Stoney came out and said it was the right decision for the safety of everyone involved. And now we've got to focus on our development for next season. We'll come to the second part of that in a little bit, but what are your views on the conclusion of the season? It's obviously disappointing. There could still be a bit of to-ing and fro-ing over how it's actually going to be finished, or do you think it'll be more civil than we've seen in other areas of football?
Well, I think what you said a minute ago, Andy, about the fact that they seem to kind of all be on board with the season ending, I think that's probably, that feels like it's the case, because unfortunately this is the news that they all assumed was coming. It's kind of been reported over the last few weeks that the WSL and the Women's Championship were likely to be ended and they wouldn't be completing their season. So I think that from the meeting yesterday when the decision was finally made that the seasons were to be ended, I think it was just inevitable, if that makes sense. So I think they all kind of got it in their heads that this was the news that was coming. In terms of how they decide things like the champions of the season, relegation, the Champions League places, or whether it is they decide to null and void it, like you say, that could maybe cause a bit of to and froing. Matt Beard, who's the West Ham manager, told Five Live that he thinks points per game is the fairest way to finish the league. He said someone's going to be upset with the decisions that are going to be made, but it's no one's fault at the moment. It's just one of those things. And I think that that's probably how a lot of players, managers, football fans feel right now, considering the situation that we're in with this pandemic, is that this isn't ideal. This isn't what anyone would have wanted. But unfortunately, this is just the situation we find ourselves in. As you said, if it is done on points per game at the top, it's very interesting because Manchester City are leading the way, but Chelsea, as you say, have played a game fewer. And Arsenal, who are the reigning champions, who had an incredible season last year, are only 3 points behind Chelsea. So it's a very tight title race. And anything could have changed in the last few games of the season. There were actually still around 8 games left to play for most clubs, which is actually around a third of the season. That's actually a hell of a lot of time. So you can understand perhaps that for Liverpool, who are bottom of the league, it's probably an anxious time for them, because if it were to go to points per game, they would actually be the team to be relegated. They would stay bottom. Whereas if they actually played out the rest of their matches, of course, the belief of their manager and the belief of their players is that they would be able to turn things around and they'd be able to stay up in the WSL. So it is a difficult one. And as Matt Beard says, you know, you're not going to make everybody happy. It's just one of those things. So I guess we'll have to wait and see what is decided. It's just kind of, it feels slightly unfair for certain teams, doesn't it? When you look at how tight it is at the top of the WSL with Manchester City, Chelsea and Arsenal, how do they pick the two teams that deserve to go into the Champions League based on points per game from what we've seen so far? There's still 8 matches of the season left to play. It always, to me, it just feels really unjust. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I suppose the fact, as you say, that it's been coming to an end is not really a surprise, especially since we knew the FA weren't offering specific financial support to teams post COVID-19. So obviously that has implications in terms of hygiene protocols and stadiums and testing and all that other sort of stuff. I mean, Susie Rack wrote something in The Guardian saying that the fact that the Frauen Bundesliga is going to restart in Germany at the end of the week. I mean, what do you think this says about the status of the WSL and the clubs in it? Does that show that we've still got a bit of a way to go, that we really genuinely feel that the WSL is part of the football family? Do you think the FA could have done more?
Yeah, that does make me feel a little bit like maybe we could have done more here and that perhaps these games could have been still finished. But I guess the thing is that these boards just, they have to make decisions and maybe they're under a bit of pressure to make decisions. And maybe that's why they've decided to come to this decision. I know that the reasoning for why the season has decided to be ended by the FA is that it came after overwhelming feedback from the clubs. Now, that to me says that across the last 10 weeks that we've been off of football and that the players and the teams have had this break, they must have been conducting several meetings. And from the feedback in these meetings, it must be a case that the majority of these clubs felt that it was the right thing to do to end the season and that they were kind of happy to do so. Because otherwise, I don't see why that would be the statement that the FA put out, that there's overwhelming feedback from the clubs to end the season. So it must be something that over time, they've come to this decision and they feel that it's the best one they can come to. You know, the situation in Germany is very different. You know,
yeah,
they returned back to football a lot earlier than we are. You know, we're still yet to find out when elite football in this country is going to return. A decision still hasn't been made on that, but it's looking like it's now been pushed even further back to around June the 26th from an article I read in the Times earlier today. So if that's the case, then we are obviously working to a very different timescale and very different kind of borderlines, I guess, with this virus, whereas Germany have obviously had it under better control. So perhaps they're in a very different situation and they've been able to complete their women's league where we've not been able to do so.
Either way, it is done. What have been your highlights of the season, Jules?
Oh, do you know what? It's been such an amazing Women's Super League season, and I've been fortunate enough to be involved in a lot of the matches with BT Sport. And I think there are so many highlights to take from it. And I don't want the fact that the season has been ended to kind of take anything away from what a brilliant season it's been, because I have absolutely no doubt that despite this break in football, when the football returns next season, when it's safe to do so, when the WSL and the Championship returns, I really do hope that we see the big crowds that we've seen this season, which for me has been one of the highlights, seeing that increased interest in the women's game and just an improvement to the view of the women's game as well from football fans that weren't previously involved in women's football. You know, the kind of fans that have written into us on Jules and Andy saying how much they've enjoyed learning about the women's game from the discussions that we've had here on the podcast. I mean, I think that this season has been a real growing point for the women's game, and I hope that that continues. But for me, the highlights, for one of them, has to be the Manchester Derby at the start of the season when I got to host that game for BT, and it was the first match back to the WSL season. Manchester United had just been promoted from the Championship into the WSL, playing against Manchester City. It was held at the Etihad. So having a game of that magnitude, a Manchester derby, the first ever Manchester derby in the WSL, in the top flight of women's football, to be played at one of the men's stadiums, which was something that had been promised during the summer when we were at the Women's World Cup and we heard that it was going to be a big season for WSL and we were going to see lots of games being played in the men's stadiums. I wasn't sure whether it would ever happen. So for me, that day to arrive at the Etihad and see over 30,000 football fans arrive to watch a Manchester derby in the women's top flight was an incredible thing to see. And I had the Lionesses manager, Phil Neville, with me as a guest on the show, Karen Carney and Rachel Brown-Finnis, who both have over 100 caps for England each. Like, it was just an amazing day, an amazing working experience, but also as a football fan and a fan of the women's game, to see what growth the women's game had kind of taken over the last couple of years, and particularly off the back of the Women's World Cup. That was a huge highlight for me. But in terms of on the pitch as well, we've seen so many amazing matches. There have been some incredible games, lots of other matches being played at men's stadiums as well, and seeing other huge crowds. But we've also seen, as we've already discussed, one of the tightest title races as well. The fact it's so close at the top and it's so competitive has been brilliant to watch. Watching Arsenal try and defend their title has been really exciting to see. And then we've seen the arrival of one of the best women's players in the world come to the WSL in Sam Kerr, arriving at Chelsea. Just to be able to see her play in the WSL has been a really exciting thing. So there have been, yeah, plenty of highlights, and I think lots of positives that this league can focus on and hopefully build on for next season.
Yeah, we hope to see more of it. It's been fantastic seeing them as part of the whole game at some of the biggest stadiums in the country. And as you were saying, Chelsea showing a lot of ambition. Big deal for them to get back in the Champions League. And it looks like by hook or by crook, however they decide to finish the league, they will be getting back into it. So interested to see how they get on next season. Before we go, we want to do a couple of bits of correspondence. As always, we've got one from Stefan Leverton here. He says, "Hi, both of you. We'll jump right in and ask if there is any insight to the tickets situation in Germany. Last weekend saw the welcome return of some football for the first time in months. Obviously, those games were played in empty stadiums, but presumably season ticket holders had technically paid to attend the game. I just wondered what clubs or authorities had done in terms of possible refunds, discount, future promises, or simply nothing related to tickets. I'm an Arsenal season ticket holder so far. I've heard nothing about renewals and refunds. I understand, of course, that it's an unprecedented situation and all of that. Any insight to what's happening in Germany would be welcome. Yours sincerely, Stefan. P.S. As an Arsenal fan, I chose Wolfsburg as my Bundesliga team. Won the cup in recent years, the league sometime before that, currently outside European places, and I drive a VW. Well, that's pretty good reasoning. You've got more than one reason there. What they've done, Stefan, is that they've all the clubs in the Bundesliga have given fans the right to reclaim their money back. In many cases, they've also said if you would not reclaim the money back, it would be very helpful to us. Schalke have been one of those, and they've, for example, offered a commemorative scarf or a commemorative shirt to fans who haven't taking their money back. The other thing is you can get it as a credit for the club shop. Quite a lot of other clubs have said, well, you can have your money back, but we could give the money to a social initiative. So, for example, Dortmund are giving their season ticket money that's not claimed back by the season ticket holders to organisations that have helped to combat COVID-19 and help vulnerable people within Dortmund and the surrounding area. You look at Cologne, who have pledged to give any money that season ticket holders don't ask for back to amateur and grassroots football in the region and the city, which I think is an absolutely terrific initiative. So there are loads of different ideas. But we have to say as well, Jules, some Premier League clubs have already pledged to give the money back, led by Manchester City and Everton.
Yeah, exactly, Andy. Manchester City and Everton, two of the first clubs to have done that. They've offered full refunds to their fans that have prepaid for season tickets. At the start of lockdown, obviously I follow all of Brighton's news very closely, and they were one of the first clubs to actually freeze direct debits right at the start of lockdown while everything was up in the air about what was happening with football. They've now also come forward and offered refunds to their fans for any season tickets, because of course the rest of this season will be played behind closed doors if the football returns. So we are seeing Premier League clubs do that. I'm pretty sure that the majority of Premier League clubs will eventually follow suit on that as well.
One last one to squeeze in is from Johnny Brown. He says, how's it going? I hope everyone is well. Just wanted to say that he didn't get to answer Eugene's question on the potential of an Irish team in the Premier League. As a proud Irishman who loves football, I would absolutely love for there to be a team based in my hometown of Dublin, with maybe another team in Belfast or Cork, so there could be a Cardiff-Swansea-esque rivalry. Mm-hmm. It would also be brilliant for football in Ireland for there to be a Premier League stroke Football League team due to mismanagement of the FAI. I presume Andy is wanting to speak of his Don's suggested switch to Dublin back in the day, but mm-hmm. hopefully without that Egypt, Eamon Dunphy, his words, not mine, involved, there could be a proper club set up in Ireland and we don't have to steal somewhere else's. I don't know where and how that could happen.
I thought he was talking about you being an Egypt then.
He might be. I don't know where and how that could happen, but hopefully it could. Kind regards to everyone working hard during these times. Your work is very much appreciated. Johnny Brown, thanks for that, Johnny. Well, I'll go back to the original email from Eugene Waters that we didn't get to. It says, hi, Jules and Andy. Love this show and the Football Ramble in general. I used to listen to your shows on my way to and from playing gigs at the weekends, which were all cancelled, but now listen on my daily lockdown run within our 5 kilometre radius. A few weeks ago, I was running when I heard a documentary on an Irish sports show about the time when Wimbledon were apparently considering a move to Dublin. My question to you guys is, what do you think would have happened if the move had happened? Would Wimbledon, supported by probably the entire population of Ireland, now be a top Premier League side playing at the Aviva? What would it have meant more widely for other clubs if it had been deemed a success? Would we have had Brighton playing in Brussels? There's a little smiley face before you get too annoyed. I know the idea grates against what many of us consider to be the right path for football, but equally it's not unheard of in other sports. I'm thinking American football, nor a million miles away from the mooted Euro Super Leagues. And would it really be worse to have had a club like Wimbledon, given what eventually happened with the Spit, playing in Dublin as opposed to, say, Newcastle, owned by Saudi Arabia? Anyway, keep up the good work, guys. I can't wait to hear you guys discussing real matches or potential transfers to my beloved Arsenal. Well, I don't know about the second part of that sentence, Eugene, but the rest of it is really interesting, because this was basically the reason why the Norwegian consortium, who eventually moved Wimbledon to Milton Keynes, it was the premise on which they were sold, Wimbledon, really. The idea that they would get to take it to Dublin and there'd be this huge new market to open it up to. Obviously, the FAs in Ireland and in England didn't agree with that. But of course, yes, there is room for that to happen. We were reminded about that when, we've all been rewatching The Last Dance, and we were talking about that last week, weren't we? And in one of the finals, the Bulls are playing the Seattle Supersonics, who are no longer there. They got shifted lock, stock and barrel overnight to Oklahoma City. And now the Oklahoma City Thunder are a pretty successful franchise, which of course is the difference between what's happened with them and what's happened with Wimbledon and Milton Keynes. Because of course, AFC Wimbledon, the Phoenix Club, are in the same division as Milton Keynes, which I suppose is somewhat unprecedented. It's an unbelievable story from both sides of it, really. And at least part of that is due to the cultural resistance that exists here, isn't it, to teams moving and the opprobrium that's been attached to Milton Keynes, not just from traditional Wimbledon supporters as well. But I think it's interesting to hear it rediscussed now, because I wonder what sort of audience that sort of discussion would have now, as opposed to when it was being discussed in the mid to late 90s, because of course we're all far more conscious of the global nature of the Premier League audience now, aren't we? So we've had discussions since then about, you know, the 39th game. Teams are far more into pre-season tours in untapped markets, as they like to say. So whereas for me, the idea is not an especially palatable one, I do wonder how it would be discussed if it had been an idea that was brought to the table now or in the last 5 years, for example. I mean, Jules, from your perspective, if we were talking about not a club being pinched from the current Premier League or Football League, but just say a new club existing in Ireland and being part of the Premier League, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, this ain't for me, Andy. I'm not feeling it. I'm not going to lie. I don't know whether I'm just really old school in the way I feel about my football club, but I don't know. It doesn't sit right with me, the kind of idea that, I mean, like Eugene kind of joked about, but Brighton playing in Brussels, for example. Yeah.
Is that just the point where he lost you?
Yeah, I don't like it. It's just, and I'm sure Brussels is great. I'm sure it's a wonderful place and I'd very much like to go on a holiday. But the thought of Brighton and Hove Albion being based out in Brussels or anywhere other than Brighton is just weird. It's weird enough when your football team's stadium moves, you know, like you become so attached to just that location of where your stadium sits and that being the home of your football club. To even move across the road to a new stadium or wherever it might be, you know, a couple miles down the road or whatever, is weird enough, let alone moving city or moving country. It just, yeah, for me, this is just, it's just weird and it doesn't kind of feel right. But, you know, there have been discussions quite a lot about potentially a club like Celtic, who are so successful in Scotland, being part of the Premier League. That's something that's been discussed a lot, hasn't it? And, you know, a lot of people disagree with that, but it is an interesting discussion. I can see why it's something that's being discussed, but for me, I don't like the idea at all.
There you go. Well, thanks for the question, Eugene and
I've
Johnny.
I've made my point quite clear, haven't I?
it'll be a fairly resounding no from us. Thanks for joining us, as always, this week. Remember, you can always get in touch at Jules Breach, at Andy Brassel, Jules and Andy at Football Ramble Daily. Tomorrow on Ramble Meets, we'll be having the second part of Luke's interview with Danny Murphy. That's Ramble Meets Danny Murphy. If it's anything compared to the first part, it'll be a real treat. So you'll be able to get that on the Football Ramble Daily feed, as always.
Yeah, loads of good stuff to listen to, as always. But that's it from us this week. Andy, Dortmund Bayern tonight. Can't wait for that one. Will you be working on it, or are you watching from home?
I will be watching it at home with my family. Nice. And doing a little bit of work on it on the sly as well. But yeah, remember, 5:30 kickoff. Don't sleep on it.
Yeah, can't wait. All right, well, have a good week, guys, and we will see you next time on Jules and Andy. Bye.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.